Well, hey there. Welcome to The Real Podcast. We share the stories and insights of real people that challenge your mind and inspire you to grow. For more information and resources, check out our website at CochraneAlliance.com/real. So, let's get real.
I'm guessing that those of you who are listening, if you are a world citizen, you've heard a little bit about what has been happening in the Middle East for the past, it seems like it's been going on forever, but a decade for sure. The situation in Syria and with heavy unrest and changes in that country, which has led to people being scattered out of their home country and wondering what their future holds. And it's my privilege today to welcome into the Real studio Kenan Farah, who is Syrian and a pretty new friend of mine, and along with him, a longtime friend of mine, Mike Potker. Gentlemen, welcome to the Real studio. Kenan, rather than me be the one to tell your story a little bit, just tell us where you're from, how long you've been in Canada, and a little bit about your family.
Yeah. Hello, everybody. My name is Kenan Farah. I'm from Syria. I have been here in Canada for 4 months. I have a family. I have two sisters and one brother. One of my sisters living here in Cochrane since for 3 years ago, and the rest of my family lived there in Syria, okay. In Damascus City.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Mike, you have been in Canada a little longer, so tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, your family, and what All brings right. you. Why are you here in the Real studio with Kenan?
Well, I'm good friends with Kenan. I think I first met Kenan over the phone about 2.5 years ago.
Yeah, almost.
I met Kenan through Roba. I was involved with the first Syrian refugee sponsorship group in Cochrane here. And then over that time, working with Kenan's sister, she approached me and introduced me to Kenan as somebody who would like to come to Canada. And so I kind of helped facilitate that. And and when Kenan arrived here 3 months ago, we became pretty close friends, worked together quite a bit.
Oh, awesome. Kenan, I know that as we have planned for this interview, one of the things you've been worried about is, are you going to be able to communicate in English? So say what you need to say to our listeners here.
Okay, I would like to inform the listener that I'm not fluent in English. I'm trying to do my best. Attend English class in Columbia College, so I'm gonna try to do my best. But I'm sorry if you misunderstand me.
Yeah, I don't think any apologies are needed. You're doing just fantastic, and so far I've understood 100% of what you've had to say, and I'm sure everyone listening the same.
Great, thank you.
So we want to get a little bit at Kenan, your story, and trying to understand as Canadians a little bit of the journey from your country to coming to ours. And I hope that'll lead us to better appreciate what your people are going through and maybe inspire us in some way to be better friends. Mm-hmm. So maybe just tell us a little bit about what it was like. What city did you grow up in, and what was it like growing up in Syria?
Mm-hmm. I spent most of my lifetime in Damascus City, which is the capital of Syria. Mm-hmm. I spent there about 28 continuous years in the same place, the same house, with my family. Growing up in Syria means that you got one of the best weather. I noticed that after I became to Canada. Yeah.
So it's sunny all the time and warm, or is it hot?
Yeah, it's warm. At summer, sometimes it's hot, and the winter wasn't that bad, so the temperature doesn't go minus zero. It's rarely to go minus zero, so you can go out anytime you want. Yeah, and when we were kids, We have some parks near to our buildings. We were playing soccer most of the time. Yeah, and Syria has maybe 5 or 6 million population, and it's a busy city. It's not that huge area, but we have buildings with floors. Yeah, we have floors, buildings. So we feel like we are close together.
Okay.
Here in Canada, it's a little bit different because there is a lot of townhouses here.
And you really get to know your neighbors because they're like right there beside you.
Yeah.
Okay.
We can hear each other.
Okay. So when you were young, was there an awareness that there was potential for conflict growing up and knowing Syria's position in the world, or as a boy, was it, this is a great country and I don't really care what's going on in the world?
Yeah, when I was young, I didn't care about all that. I just think that this is my country, this is my life, would be like, and I love it. But when we grow up a little bit, when the war started, it goes different way.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, did you want to be an engineer early on, or is that something that you dreamed about doing, or something that came later?
Since I was in high school, I was good at science and math, and I would like to study something related to math and physics and something like this. And after I graduate of high school, I found that the civil engineering one of my best choices, and I got good marks to get there, because you know, studying in Damascus University, you should get a high level of graduation in high school.
Okay.
Yeah. So I went there. There were some difficulties there to study, to understand all that math and physics and chemical and all that stuff. But I did it.
Okay. And was this before there was heavy conflict, so it was still relatively peaceful in your university years?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's still.
And so did you get a job after university?
I started a small job as a training with a subcontractor. We were doing a quick decoration for some building, which there's nobody in there. So we do just quick decoration to help people, they were refugees.
Okay.
And we were helping them to settle down in this building just for a short time.
So they were from other parts of Syria or from other countries?
Yeah, from other part of Syria.
Okay. Yeah. So when did life begin to change for you?
Yeah. It started 2013 when the war started.
Okay.
I was attending the Damascus University that time. The most difficult thing I remember that we should go to the university under the war. So I think my life started to change.
Okay. So what little things or big things started to be different than when you were growing up?
Yeah, I wasn't feel safe there. And I started to plan to how to get out of this war, because it was terrible to continue your life there in that time. Yeah.
So did you see any direct evidence of fighting or conflict in Damascus, or it was always something you heard about was happening but never saw any effects?
No, I was in the middle of the war, and the terrorist people, they were throwing bombs on the city, in Damascus city, every day. So I witnessed most of the war there.
Okay.
Yeah. And the army was attacking from near to my house. So it was so loud, you're going to freak every time they throw a bomb, and you're going to see a lot of people hurt there or die. But you should continue, because the life goes on. You should keep going. If you stop, you're going to stuck again. So we keep going to our school, our university, our job. And you can't imagine how the people there used to that and live with this situation. Mm. Yeah, when I remember, I couldn't. How did I do that? How can I handle all that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we did it, and we continue living.
And did fighting happen often at nighttime, and then or all times of day?
All things? The time. Yeah, but it was bad at morning. Okay. Yeah. It was bad that morning.
Okay. So if there was fighting on the streets, you'd kind of wait till it clears up and then go out and go to school? Kind of thing? Classes, did they get canceled or?
It wasn't like fighting at streets.
Okay.
Because the capital was a little bit safe about fighting.
Okay.
But the most big fear was that they were throwing bomb from outside of the city on the city, so nobody can do anything against this thing.
Against missiles coming in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And did you lose any friends or family?
Yeah, I lost a lot of friends, a lot of neighbors in my avenue. Mm. Actually, we lost about 5 guys similar to my age in my avenue. Yeah.
From just bombs.
Yeah.
I see.
And some women, some old guys. Yeah, we lost a lot. But nobody from my family get hurt.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah, thanks God.
So when did you decide that, you know what, I don't want to be here anymore?
When I was close to graduation, I decided that I should go out of Syria, because if I graduate, they will take me to the military service.
Oh, and you'll be an engineer for the army?
Yeah. I don't think I will be an engineer. You will be a soldier.
Oh, okay. You'll just be drafted.
Or an officer. If you are an engineer, you're going to be an officer in the army.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't like to fight. And I think I'm not born to fight or to go through the war. Hmm. So I decided to go out of Syria. And there is a rule there. If you want to escape the military service in a legal way, you can spend about 4 years out of Syria and pay $8,000 and you can escape the military service in a legal way.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what you did.
Yeah, but I didn't. I didn't pay the 8,000 yet, because this is my 4th year. I didn't complete the whole 4 years.
So this happened in 2015. You made the decision then.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you've been gone out of the country for 4 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, after 4 years, you're gonna start an application for that.
So technically, they could ask you to come back still or whatever without the money.
Nobody will ask for you, but you can't go there if you didn't pay.
Okay.
If you don't pay, yeah.
I see. Okay. So, what was your plan when you decided? Okay, I'm gonna get out.
First, I started to search about complete my studying in Germany, because as an engineer in Syria, you can go for master automatically in Germany, but you should study Deutsch, Deutsch language, which is one of the hardest language in the world. So I started to study Deutsch. Then I decided to go out quickly, because the situation was getting so bad quickly. So I had a friend there in Erbil, some friends. They helped me to get visa to go to Erbil in the north of Iraq.
Okay.
Yeah, which is a country near to my country.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I got it quickly in 2 months or 1 month, and I traveled there.
Okay. And what under what premise were you going to Erbil? Was there work there or?
No, nothing. They said there is a lot of work, but I couldn't find because the economic situation there was a little bit bad. They have some problem. And I spent about 4 months to find a job.
Okay. And
I found it by chance because my one of my friends went to Canada.
Oh.
Yeah. So he left his job as a cashier and I got that job.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So how did your family feel about you deciding to leave Syria?
Yeah, they want me to do that because they were worried about me. So if I stayed, I should go to the military service and nobody come back alive. And I know some guys spent about 8 years all the war time and they're still there. They're still stuck there.
I see.
So thank God I can I could go out and save my life.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your parents were happy even though they weren't ready to see you.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Sure.
So what year then, this was 2015 that you decided to leave for Erbil?
Yeah.
Which is almost 4 years ago now.
Yeah.
So what was it like living as a Syrian in Iraq? And what kind of accommodation did you have there? Did you have enough money? Was life easy or difficult?
Yeah, it wasn't easy because it was more expensive than Syria. And I remember that I sold my car to get the visa there. And I was barely getting my needs there. So you should work so hard and they give you not enough for your needs.
I see.
Yeah.
And is there a large Syrian community in Erbil?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a lot of Syrian people.
Okay. So what was the process? Tell us about the process of thinking about Canada. And so how did that come about? Because were you still thinking of going to Germany at that time?
No. I gave up about going to Germany because you should pay 10,000 euro to start the first year, to cover yourself for the first year. And I wasn't had all that money in that time. So I decided to find a job in Erbil since my sister told Mike and the Alliance Church to try to do a sponsorship for me. And we started talking and doing the application. That was...
And I just got to say that the day that we talked on the phone, I already was amazed at how good your English was, Mr. I don't speak English.
So let's back up a little bit then. So what year did Kinan's sister come to Canada?
She arrived with her family, Ramez and the kids, in 2016.
Okay, and did they come direct from Syria or did they come via... Another country.
I believe they were in Lebanon for a while before coming to Canada.
Okay. Yeah. And did they leave Damascus before you did?
No.
They left after.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you, Mike, tell us about the process of helping her, because you were involved in helping her family come to Canada before Kinan came.
Yeah. Well, the thing you got to realize is that when folks come as refugees to Canada, they're leaving behind people like family, like Kinan got left behind. And so all of the families that we saw come into the Cochrane community back in 2016, they immediately started talking about how they could bring relatives to come and join them here. And so, and in all their own kind of resourceful ways, they all found ways to start sponsoring loved ones. And so that was kind of the context for the conversations that started between me and Roba. And when I heard about it, my first thought was, you know, it'd be great for there to be more family around Roba and Ramez, and just when you've got more people that speak your language and that you know and you love, it just makes everything about life easier. Mm-hmm. And so it didn't take me long to figure out, well, this would be a really good thing. It'd be really good for Keenan because Iraq's not the safest place in the world mm-hmm. to live either. Mm-hmm. And he could come and be close to one of his sisters and be a support to her and continue to kind of build a community here in Cochrane.
Okay, so when you remember now the process, what's the first you heard from Roba that he was here? Mm-hmm. That he was in Iraq. Sorry. So what did you need to do next from this side?
Well, we needed to find a way to facilitate a sponsorship. In Canada, there are a number of different ways to do refugee sponsorships. Not necessarily with refugees either. You can sponsor people who aren't refugees, but there's all a different process for a whole bunch of different ways. And so the way that we facilitated Roba's sponsorship for her families and the other families that came was through a sponsorship agreement holder organization who agreed to kind of adopt our little group here in Cochrane as a constituent group.
And who was that?
That group, what we called ourselves the Syrian Refugee Sponsorship Group.
Okay.
It was like kind of a grassroots community thing that my friend Andy Marshall was him and... Liz Giles were kind of the two spear point. They were the tip of the spear as far as making something happen in Cochrane. And we just rallied together people of all different backgrounds and faiths and no faith, and just decided, like, you know what, as people of Cochrane, as citizens of the world, Cochraneites, we need to do something to make life better, at least for some people. Mm. And that was how those sponsorships were born. And so when the opportunity came or the request came for Keenan, I kind of went back to the group and said, how do we make this work? And after a number of conversations I had some conversations with you and some of the leadership mm-hmm. at our church. And when it all kind of settled down, the way forward was to have a similar arrangement with another sponsorship agreement holder, which was our sister church in Calgary, First Alliance Church. They are agreement holder, mm-hmm. and they took us as Cochrane Alliance Church on as their constituent group. And so, that was the arrangement that facilitated things. And then after that, it was a mountain of paperwork that Keenan had some of it that he had mm-hmm. to fill on his end. I filled out a bunch. I had an intern that year. I got him to fill out the paperwork for me. Thank you, Dan Paris. And once we got all that paperwork submitted, then we had to hurry up and wait.
Okay. So what was it like knowing that the possibility, that the process was started, but you were still in Iraq, you weren't here? What was it like waiting?
Yeah, first I was so excited and so happy to have a better place to live, mm-hmm. especially near to my sister family, because in Iraq I was living by myself for 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. And when I heard about that I was so excited, so happy, and we should wait for a while. And after a year, they called me and gave me an appointment with a Canadian officer.
Okay.
And I did the interview with him. He said, congratulations, when we were sitting. Yeah.
Oh, really? And so you thought that you were going to get on the plane tomorrow?
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. I thought it's going to take about 1 or 2 months to get here, but it took about 1 year.
Another year from that interview.
Another year. Okay. Yeah.
And did they say why? What took so long?
I can't reach anybody. We asked Mike a lot to do some search. That's mm-hmm. why it takes a lot. But there is a process. You know, there is a lot of people waiting.
Yeah.
There is a waiting list. So I think I was better than some people. I had a good situation than other people. So I can wait a little bit more.
Okay.
I think it was like that. And finally, I did it. We did it, actually.
So did you look up Cochrane on the internet lots?
Yes, sure.
So what was your impression looking at the town and Alberta from sure, the other side of the world?
Yeah. I love the environment here, the mountain. And when I arrived, I love it more.
Okay.
Actually, I love living in Cochrane.
Okay, well, let's not jump to... So you're waiting for another year after the interview. Tell me about the day that you found out that you had plane tickets or that it was going to actually happen. Mm-hmm. Do you remember?
Yeah, they surprised me. They shake me. And somebody called me and said, "Are you ready to go in a few weeks?" I said, "Yes, totally. Mm-hmm. I'm ready." Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was like the lightning. Huh. Just arrange my stuff and start to get ready. And then we start traveling. So I went first from Erbil to Istanbul, then from Istanbul to Toronto to Calgary.
Okay.
And there was some delaying in the plans, and it took me about 4 years to get Canada. four days.
4 days, okay.
Yeah, and unfortunately,
felt like 4 years.
Yeah, unfortunately, we are, as Syrian people, we are not allowed to go through Turkey. So we spent about 15 hours sitting on chairs in Istanbul airport. Mm. And first day when we want to start a trip from Erbil, unfortunately the weather was bad, and they delay the first trip. Then we went to Istanbul and wait for 15 hours. Then it took about 12 hours from Istanbul airport to Toronto. Then we spent a night there, and then every family or everyone
was going to a different place.
Yeah, because I remember we were five Syrian family on the same trip to Toronto, and nobody can speak English. So
I was asking for your help.
Yeah, I was the translator there.
I see.
Yeah.
So it was in March or February when you arrived here.
February.
So tell me about February. Feeling the Calgary air for the first time. What was it, a cold day?
You know, I met him at the airport with Ramez and another friend here from Cochrane. Yeah. We hugged, we kissed, we got all our things gathered up. And when we walked out the door, that's when I realized that Keenan was a man of prayer, because I could hear, as we walked into the minus 30, I could hear him go, "Oh my God." I laughed. And I just said, "Welcome to Canada, my friend."
Yeah. I thought that am I in the freezer or something like that?
Yeah, that's right. One giant freezer. That's Calgary in February.
Yeah. Mm. But I like the snow, actually. Mm. Yeah.
So as you've come, tell me about what are your impressions of Canada so far? What's it like here? You're, you know, not quite a half a year in, but what's it been like?
Yeah. Actually, it's a calm place to live. I like how the people are so kind to me, and they try to understand what I'm saying in English. Nobody said, "No, you don't talk good English. I will not talk to you." No, everybody respond to me and were so kind, and they are excited about hearing my story to come from Middle East to Canada. Mm. And I got a lot of friends here, like Mike and you and some friends. Mm-hmm. And they are all awesome guys and helpful. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
I don't know if you've picked it up, but in Canada, we're asking right now as Canadians, should we do more refugees? Should we help more people? Or it maybe costs a lot of money for us. Should we bring more people in? What do you think? What would you think? What would you say to Canadians who are wondering, should we bring more refugees or not? What would you say?
Yeah, I say if you can help more people, you'd better to do. But it depends on the situation. So if they are out there, out of their country, and the refugee in a bad situation, so it will be better to help them. But we should understand that a lot of them don't speak enough English. We should tell them that you need to speak English. You need to work hard to effort for your needs there. They will help you, but not forever. You should have some job. You should get a job there. So I think it's a good thing to help people more, but we should tell them what they are going to face here.
Okay.
And maybe you can ask somebody like me, maybe, to tell them what the life, how the life different here in Canada. It's a better life, but there is some rules to go on.
Okay, so if I'm hearing you right, you're saying to Canadians, you'd say it's good to help,
sure,
but to refugees or potential immigrants from difficult situations, do your work, do all you can to prepare yourself, so that you'll be able to stand on your own two feet once you get to the country.
Sure, okay. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. This is maybe a funny question that I didn't prepare you for, but in many Canadians' minds, if you're from the Middle East, you're from Syria, then you're a Muslim person, guaranteed. And I know we've talked, and that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, that's not necessary, because in Syria, I think we have 4 million Christian people. A lot of them get out of Syria in the war, actually. But we have an old culture in Syria. You know, Damascus has been a city since 11,000 years.
Yes.
There is an evidence about that.
Wow.
It's an ancient 11,000 city.
11,000 year continuously. So.
And we thought 100 years of Cochrane was something.
You are so young.
And do you find that... have you ever felt that people are suspicious of you and wonder or treat you different, or they hide it well?
No, I don't think they treat me in a different way.
Okay.
Actually, I love the way how people deal with me here, especially in my new career here, in my new job. I got a job in Starbucks.
Okay.
And all the staff there were so kind and so awesome. I love them.
Yeah. Awesome.
They are so helpful people.
So how is Keenan in at this time different from the Keenan who arrived in Calgary a half a year ago? How are you different today?
Yeah, I think I feel that I there's a lot of change in my life happened since I arrived here. So now I started to understand what is the Canadian culture, how to live in Canada, how to respect the law, and how to you shouldn't go personally with people you just met. In the Middle East, it's okay to ask about how many children, how many. What is your salary?
Okay.
It's okay there. It's something good, but here it's different. Yeah.
So you're saying we're much more intensely private.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit intense.
Yeah, but you should respect that.
Personal space.
Yeah, personal space. Yeah.
Okay.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah.
Mike. How are you different than you were when I know you were involved already in some process, but how is your investment in Keenan's process? How are you different?
Oh man. Well, I think the thing that I don't know if this is how Keenan has grown or changed, but I'm sure, I mean, to hear your story, you know, and I've heard it a number of times, and I still, every time I hear you talk about your life, I marvel at how resilient you are. I know that's a new vocabulary word for you. Resilient. You're resourceful. Mm-hmm. And I'm amazed. I think about what you're able to do and what you're able to accomplish when you set your mind to something, mm-hmm. and without giving up. And I admire that. And so it's kind of like, it's in some ways I feel like his big brother, and I walk beside him and I try to dispense wisdom on him, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But then in other ways, I really look up to Keenan as a role model of resilience and determination, and a guy who, that I really love and respect. Mm. And thank so having a friend like Keenan in my life has just made me a better person. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So talk to your fellow Canadians about being part of bringing refugees to Canada. What would you say?
I think that if you, on an individual level, you will be forever changed for the better. You'll have a totally different perspective on the world when you make friends from other cultures. Mm. Especially when it's not their first choice to be here. Like every Syrian friend I've talked to wishes that, you know, they just want to have their life back. Mm. And Canada is kind of like the second best option, because the first best option got destroyed. Mm. Mm-hmm. And that just changes your whole perspective on things. And on, so on an individual level, that's what changes you, your perspective. But also there's a corporate level. I think that even in a small town like Cochrane, when we have people from all over the world coming with different cultures, different diets and ways of cooking, different ways of enjoying life,
or looking at the world,
or looking at the world. When we get together and we build community together, It isn't easy, but it makes us better. It does, because when you've got a whole bunch of people that are on their own being changed and challenged, and their perspectives being widened, and then when those people all get together, the possibilities of how to make our town better just open up. And again, it's not simple. It's complex and complicated, but it just, it's like a little taste of heaven when that happens, because, you know, as from a Christian point of view, we look forward to the day when every people from every nation will gather around, and be reunited with their Heavenly Father. And so when we get to kind of do some of that now, it's just a little taste of what we've got to come ahead of us.
Cool. So what's next, Keenan? What's ahead for you?
Now I just want to improve my English and then get a better job in my field.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to equal my certificate here, and it's gonna take a while, but I think it's gonna happen if I consist on it. But here's something I want the people here to know, that when we bring refugee to here, they have some talent, some opportunities, some certification
skills.
So like me, I have a bachelor in civil engineering. So we should make it easier to them to equal their degree here. Mm. That will make them settle down quickly.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's a lot of red tape into showing that you know your field.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Mm. I hope so. Yeah.
Well, it's late to say this, but welcome to Canada. Welcome
thank
to Cochrane.
You. Thank you again.
Thank you for being so open and willing to share with people that maybe don't know very much about about your country and about the stories that are there. Mike, thanks for your investment in a new friend. And my hope is that this little conversation could be used to help people understand the plight, the stories, and the good things that are happening as a result of serving and welcoming refugees into Canada.
I hope so. And if I have a chance to say thank you to the Alliance Chairs, which is give me the sponsorship, and I would like to thank my angel, Mike.
That's the first time he's ever been called that.
Yeah, so I love to call them my angel because he's always beside me, helping me in everything and support me. So I couldn't have a chance to say thank you. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Jason. And thank you, Alliance Church in Cochrane.
Well, the thanks goes both ways because angels are messengers from God, and God's used you to encourage me. It's been it's been great. Not just to, you know, there's like the mundane taking care of things of life, but I've also appreciated the chance to share our hearts with each other and pray together.
Yeah.
And you're God's angel to me as well.
Thank you.
Thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks for listening to The Real Podcast. For more information on this episode and others, check out our website at CochraneAlliance.com/real. Until next time, keep it real.